This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. Some say the Netflix TV series House of Cards is the future of television. The entire season was released all at once last week, and it's available to watch on demand, completely bypassing the traditional network and studio system. TV blogger Ryan McGee, I call him All Things TV, joins me now in the studio. He's been reviewing the House of Cards TV series and covering the Netflix network saga since it began. Welcome, Ryan.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, let's talk about House of Cards. I've watched about half of the first episode, driven to it by my book club members this Sunday who are like, what do you mean you're not watching House of Cards? So this is a big deal.
It is a big deal. Is it the future of television, though? I would say no at this point. It's an interesting start for Netflix. This is probably both a bold and incredibly safe choice for them to do if you're going to launch something that bypasses normal network rollouts, if you're going to roll out at once. It doesn't hurt to have Kevin Spacey and David Fincher's name attached to that particular project. But really, if you want to look at, is this a game-changing entity? Probably not. That will be whatever this inspires. The idea that you're basically taking a cable show and dropping it in another medium and you're dropping it instantly. It's somewhat of a change. It's not enough of a change for me to say, like, we can now, put a pin at this point in history and say everything before and everything after is now cleaved by the introduction of House of Cards on Netflix. It's a really good show. It's nothing particularly transcendent. I like it. I'm through four episodes right now. And sort of the beauty is now that if you talk to 10 different people who are sort of, media savvy, they're at 10 different places. Mm-hmm. This creates a really interesting problem for someone like me who is used to the episodic model of rollouts and the episodic model of reviews. So right now, when I'm reviewing episode 2 for this particular Friday, we're doing weekly rollouts, there'll be a lot of people there who have seen episode 8. They've seen episode 10. And they're going to be chomping at the bit to talk about that. How do you moderate these type of discussions? It's an interesting problem to have. One of the things I love about television is the communal aspect of it, that more or less we're all still watching things more or less around the same time periods right now. House of Cards is introducing the idea that has been somewhat prevalent, which is the binge watching.
That's right. I love binge watching. I have to say, I'm a fan of it. Yeah. So I'm a fan of this model, even if, it's not a breakthrough thing. By the way, let's just pause for a moment and say Kevin Spacey, people may know from Usual Suspects and other roles. David Fincher.
He directed The Social Network, directed Zodiac, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Just so we know what kind of talent we're dealing
with.
And
he directed only the first two. And after that, there's a sort of host of directors, including Joel Schumacher, who used to direct films such as Phone Booth. And also the much maligned last two Batman movies of the previous series, the pre-Noland series there. But really, the amount of money we're talking about here, like $100 million they're talking about to produce all these episodes of television, just isn't sustainable from this decentralized world of television, which they are. I can give you sort of an example of my typical day. I come to work on the commuter rail. I'm watching a show on my phone. Maybe at lunch I go down and I can stream something on my tablet. I go home and see what's ever DVR'd the night before, then go to my live television. After that, maybe I want to pop on Netflix or Amazon Prime. You can't put a bunch of $100 million shows all over the place and hope people find them and have that be a sustainable model that is the next realm of
even
television.
Even if it's done like binge, if for the binge audience, meaning that at some point I may find it.
Yeah.
I wasn't hip to House of Cards. My book club members were like, insisting. So I can pick it up any time now because it's already there.
And you bring up a good point about metrics. Right now, what's the big driving about? What makes a television series successful? It's Nielsen ratings. Well, now they're trying to stretch out what Nielsen ratings means. Is it the overnights? Is it live plus three? Is it live plus seven? Depending on what network you're talking about. They slice and dice these things, biggest show 18 to 49 live plus seven in Texas. And they can call that, and they bury that in the lead. But the top is, top number one show of the night.
What does live plus seven mean?
Live plus seven means the number of people that watched it the night it aired, plus whoever watched it on DVR over the next week.
All right.
And increasingly, networks are getting savvy to the fact that, the audiences we think aren't there, they're actually there. They're just not necessarily watching it when we would ideally like that. And the binge viewing thing frustrates people to no end because you're in the fall and, say Breaking Bad's coming in. Well, I've heard really good things about that. The first four seasons are on Netflix. I'll go watch those at the expense of everything that's on from 8 to 11 in primetime television. You hear that from the executives all the time. They're just watch the show when we –
Yeah, but
I may
go back and do it, because right now, if anybody tells me anything about Downton Abbey or Scandal, I will have to behead them. Because I don't want to know. I want to wait for it to, you know, pile up, and then I look at it.
Yeah, and that's the thing you're getting with the Downton Abbey. The day after Christmas, America went bananas because we learned all the stuff that happened in the Christmas episode over there.
Exactly.
And for the first time, if you talk to British TV fans, and I do all the time on Twitter, they're like, well, how does it feel now? You keep spoiling everything over there for us. The shoot one show and you guys all go crazy.
I know, so. but I love it that way. I'm talking to TV blogger Ryan McGee, and we're talking about the TV season in general. We're going to get to some other issues, but right now, the House of Cards TV series and Netflix. It's on Netflix. Netflix decided to have the ability to download the entire season. That's 13 episodes. You don't have to wait. Lots of people have said it's a few of TV. Ryan says no, even though there are many more of us binge watchers now than ever have been. Just a point that Ted Sarandos, I guess that's how you pronounce his name, he's the head of Netflix, he just said in the recent issue of Broadcasting and Cable that this is the way to go. Moving Netflix from essentially renting movies to now live streaming and dropping original programming. And so he intends to be in the game and compete with HBO.
Sure. I mean, it is definitely the shift between Netflix being a portal and Netflix being a content provider. In a couple of months, their servers are going to melt because Arrested Development's next season is going to drop exclusively on Netflix in much the way that House of Cards did. The interesting thing about that, and it points more to sort of the ways of the future there, is that Mitch Hurwicz, the creator of that show, has said that there's no real wrong way to watch the 14 episodes or so they're planning on dropping that. You can actually watch them in any way, shape, or form that you want, and they all tell a more or less coherent story, but depending on the order that you watch, that's more promising about what actually this can do. And it's not that House of Cards is unimportant, but the types of shows that are going to be game changers in this decentralized model are going to have to be smaller. I mean, I've talked to lots of TV showrunners. Potentially less expensive. I would look at something like Felicia Day's The Guild, which is an online-only type of show. And that's as DIY as you can get it. That's basically people sitting in front of webcams, and then it's stitched together on a Mac.
Because let's note that House of Cards is beautiful
to look
at.
The money is on the screen.
It's filmic.
And it's not something that is necessarily sustainable, because you talk about the metrics before. How does Netflix pay this off? Is it who watches it now? Who watches it over a year? What are the aggregates about this? Sort of like HBO. HBO really doesn't care how many people watch Game of Thrones.
They have subscribers.
They have subscribers. And that's what Netflix has now. So in some ways, there are a lot of television networks that are really pressing Netflix to start revealing its data.
They're very
non-open about the way in which they say who's watching what. So they can call a success, and there's no way for us to verify it on the journalistic end.
So let me just point out that you've said, and I want to repeat, that it's a good show. It's not exciting you totally, even with all the top talent there. It's about a politician and doing some unsavory things, essentially, in Washington. But you've also noted that my favorite show set in Washington with unsavory politicians is Scandal with Kerry Washington. That's a show.
That is a show that I was reviewing
ABC
for a while for ABC. Shonda Rhimes,
who
produces 97% of the hour-long content on ABC, it feels, even though Private Practice is now over. Scandal is a great example of a show leaning into its own strengths. And I think where it has very much right now at present day against House of Cards is a respect for the audience's time. Every single episode of House, I was a fan of the first season. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was extremely flawed, but I loved Kerry Washington. I loved the urgency of the show. I loved the soapiness of it. This is the season which it went from a soap opera to a straight up opera. In terms of the emotional intent, way in which people talk over each other as if that sentence is the last sentence they're ever going to speak on this earth. And in some cases, it actually is. If you're looking for sort of, political veracity about the way that which bills are passed, or the way which people can be held under the Patriot Act, which I'm pretty sure is not correct at all, but the motivations behind everyone on Scandal,
the character development
is so just emotionally driven and clean and clear. And then you look at something at House of Cards, which is more subsumed, and they're Everything is pivoting off an education bill. I'd rather have it pivot off on a really heightened affair between Olivia Pope and the president.
Exactly.
I really respect what it's doing. I'm vastly entertained every single time I watch, and I think more people should be watching it.
Oh,
and they
me too.
Are.
Let me just say, for those who are not watching it, it stars Kerry Washington. She's a black actress, the first one to carry a primetime show since 1974 when Diane Carroll played Julia in the role. So this is amazing in that sense. The showrunner, who is the chief executive, is Shonda Rhimes, as we've mentioned, who is also a black writer. And we're talking about the smartness of the dialogue. One night, because I binge watch with my friends on this, Kerry Washington says to the other character, listen, I'm not your Sally Hemings. And I said to my friends, a lot of people ran to the dictionary, ran to Google. What is she talking about? It's very smart dialogue, and they just keep moving. They don't explain stuff. You got to ride with them, and the storylines are amazing. So, and I'm happy to see that the ratings are now more than double. They're up since
there's applauding that is shockingly rigorous this year. Things that you didn't think were important end up becoming much more important later. And again,
don't tell me. No. I'm binge watching. Okay, so we got to move to this the violence, which you're writing about and pointing out, that the violence has become so heightened in some shows, including this new one called The Following, that people are almost disassociating with it, and they're numb to it. So it means it's just got to get worse and worse. It's gross now.
There's a weird thing that happened where Fox's marketing campaign was around basically, this is the type of show you're used to seeing on cable, but now it's on network. And the takeaway seems to be that the qualifying marker of quality on cable is people getting killed. And that's just it's not remotely true at all. There's plenty of violence on television, and I would never say that there's no place for violence on television, but the way in which you engage with a topic, it's like anything else, has to be well thought out. And you have to, you know, even if your characters on screen are acting deplorable, you have to have the understanding that these things actually are deplorable and you want to engage with it. Shows such as Game of Thrones, such as Spartacus, such as Sons of Anarchy, really are very violent, but they also show the costs of that violence. One of my favorite film series of all time is the Matt Damon Bourne trilogy. And that is a series that has tons of really up-close, brutal fights. But you see the weight of that violence upon that character. And The Following is weightlessness. It's weightless. If it was a balloon and you let it go, it would float off into the ether. If you turned it sideways, it would disappear. There's no there. You know, and this is interesting because in the cultural climate in which we are in, to have a show that shows shocking acts of violence and has absolutely nothing to say about it, it's not immoral, but boy, it's sort of deplorable. There's something about that. I mean, if you look at Newtown, if you look at Aurora, the dozen other stories that don't make national headlines but make local and regional headlines, to have a character that inspires people to become serial killers based on the works of Edgar Allan Poe, you have a show which is saying that art has the effect, the ability to sway the mind. And yet you're passing the show off as mere entertainment that doesn't actually have to have any social responsibility.
So we don't know where that's going to land because people are shocked by the real life Auroras and Sandy Hooks. And I think we'll be interested to see how people respond. Really quickly, the women comedy producers or women show producers. We talked about Shonda Rhimes. Tina Fey's going off into the ether right now because 30 Rock is over. But women have now ascended to these top spots like Mindy Kaling with her own show, The Mindy Project.
They have ascended to top spots, which will be the next interesting thing to see. And Linda Holmes pointed this out on NPR recently and sort of as a wrap-up of 30 Rock in general, is that the importance of 30 Rock isn't necessarily the feminist content in the show itself, but the fact that we associate that show with Tina Fey's comedic stylings, that everything on that screen we understand came from a female writer. And while we have lots of female showrunners and lots of comedies right now, Liz Merriweather over on New Girl, Emily Kapnick on Suburgatory, Dana Fox and the late, great Ben and Kate.
That was great.
Oh, man.
I'm so sad.
A lot of times the discussions about that were how much is the female protagonist a reflection of the showrunner? There was this one-to-one correlation that really was unfair and very limiting in terms of the perspectives in which the credit to which we gave these women credit for the whole world of the show that we created. Linda Holmes pointed out quite astutely that, you know, Jack Donaghy and Tracy Jordan are just as much a Tina Fey creation as Liz Lemon.
Right.
And that's where the next thing we'll see, where people like me maybe are disappointed with the Mindy Project, is that We don't feel the Mindy Kaling in the Mindy in the
and
project.
And I've heard that. I've heard that critique from a lot of women, by the way. So I think that she's going to have to step that up to keep that show going.
Absolutely.
Because you know a Shonda Rhimes show. You know a Tina Fey show. I even felt that in the Ben and Kate.
Shonda Rhimes' unique biography in and of itself informs her shows. And that what throws people off so much. They're not used to hearing that dialogue, that perspective. Television needs more of that in order to be culturally viable and just interesting.
I know. I hope somebody picks up Ben and Kate. I love that. Well, I love speaking with a guy who knows TV and can dish it like sports, because this is my sport, Ryan McGee. So I'm right here with you. I've been speaking with TV blogger Ryan McGee about the future of television, the television series, and all things TV. You can find a link to his blog on our website, wgbhnews.org/BPR. Thanks a lot, Ryan.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio. You can find us on the web at wgbhnews.org/BPR. I'm Callie Crossley. Our show is a production of WGBH Radio. Have a great afternoon and do some binge TV viewing.